Welcome to another episode of the Deborah Health Report, where we dive into current health and medical topics to keep the Delaware Valley informed and updated. The conversation continues with cardiologist Juarez Rojas Marte, MD, about the latest advancements in heart failure treatment at any stage. Here's Rasa Kay.
Hi, I'm Rasa Kay, and we continue our discussion of heart failure with cardiologist Dr. Juarez Rojas Marte. He's the medical director of Deborah's Advanced Heart Failure and Pulmonary Hypertension Programs. And in our first segment, we talked about the risk factors, stages, and diagnosing heart failure. But then, what do you do about it? Ah, that depends on even more factors.
We classify heart failure in two main types. The reason for that is the evidence we have for both types is different in terms of the treatment. The heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, which means that the ejection fraction is above 50%, and we have heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, where the pumping of the heart or ejection fraction is below 40%. Then we have another category of in between, but just to keep it simple, we can focus on those two. So patients who have heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, there are four pillars of drugs that we use. Each one of those medications have shown to improve the longevity, or decrease the mortality of these patients over time, and improve their quality of life. So as much as possible, we always try to put patients on those medications. Once someone gets to this point, to this level, there is no other non-pharmacological way that we could use. Obviously, there are other things that we do, but these medications can help even reverse sometimes or improve the pumping of the heart. So as much as possible, we try to put patients on these drugs. And obviously, if there's something else going on, we have to do tests to find out why they develop the condition. A coronary angiogram, as I said before, to see if they have coronary artery disease, they have blockages and need to be evaluated for a bypass procedure, for a stent, or an MRI, maybe to see if there is any evidence of a prior viral infection, myocarditis. And depending on the initial suspicion, we go for different types of tests. But these four pillars of treatment is what's been shown to be effective. And there are devices that we can use as well in this group. This is where most research is available in heart failure. Patients who have a heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, that type could also be associated with coronary artery disease, but most of the time is found in more senior patients in their 70s, 80s. A very typical, the classic patient in textbooks is an elderly woman with history of high blood pressure. It's more prevalent in older women. So the treatment of this type of heart failure is managing the risk factors that led to the development of it. High blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol. Now we are more and more learning that a good number of these patients might have a condition called cardiac amyloidosis. We might do a screening for that as well, because the treatment for that is completely different. But mainly we focus on treating the chronic conditions that led to the development of it. And if there are any other issues, let's say a valvular problem that has developed that we can't control with medications, then we have procedures and devices to take care of that. But the main treatment of heart failure with preserved ejection fraction is taking care of the underlying conditions. And obviously, if the patient has congestion, use diuretics to treat them. There is one medication now that has been approved. It's the one that has the highest level of recommendation. It's fairly new. It's a class of medication called SGLT2 inhibitor. It's a diabetes medication, but also has been shown to have a benefit in heart failure patients. And this one is used in both those with preserved heart failure and those with reduced ejection fraction.
Clearly, you have a big choice of pharmaceuticals to choose from, depending on what you find in any given patient, correct?
Yes.
A quick definition of cardiac amyloidosis.
Cardiac amyloidosis is an infiltrative cardiomyopathy, meaning it's a problem of the heart muscle caused by something that infiltrates it. In the case of cardiac amyloidosis, it's a protein produced in the liver and deposits in the heart muscle. It develops an affinity for the cardiac muscle. So as that happens, the heart muscle gets thicker and thicker and thicker, and that causes heart failure with most of the times with preserved ejection fraction. So the heart just becomes very stiff and the pressures inside of the heart build up. So the more the protein deposits, the worse the condition, and the life expectancy is very limited. It's like 3 to 5 years when it's not treated. It's very important to screen for that when we have the suspicion, because there are ways of treating that nowadays.
Super important then to comply with your medication regimen, but are there side effects that make people reluctant or get in the way of that?
Always. Any medical intervention, any drug has a side effect, but that is explained ideally, or should be explained by the physicians whenever someone is started on a medication. If a patient develops any side effect, we just take them off the medication, or if it's something related to the dose, we might adjust the dose. That makes it very important for a patient to maintain a close communication with the physician. Sometimes patients don't call, don't want to bother, and they just wait for the next appointment. But it's very important that if they're developing a side effect, to communicate with the physicians, because many times there are alternatives, there are other medicines that could be used, or the dose could be adjusted. The way we see it is that the potential benefits of the treatment outweighs any potential side effects. Try the medication. If something happens, we deal with it. Take it off, adjust the dose, find something else.
Devices then. What do we have to help manage heart failure, and are there downsides to that?
Tons of devices, and more coming to the market. Patients who have heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, if they have a certain electrical abnormalities on the EKG, those patients could qualify for a CRT, or cardiac resynchronization therapy. That is a problem that can cause the heart to be out of sync, and that by itself can cause heart failure. So when patients have that and get this device, the pumping of the heart can get in sync again, and actually the ejection fraction, the pumping of the heart, can get better. Similar to this device are the ICD, or defibrillators, as people call it. These are devices that some patients whose ejection fractions remain low and are at risk of having deadly arrhythmias would benefit from.
So these are implantable?
These are implantable, yeah. These two are implanted below the collarbone. It's a small incision. There are different variations nowadays of the implantable cardioverter defibrillator, but these are minimally invasive. I mentioned before that sometimes patients have valvular problems, like aortic stenosis. It's a fairly common problem in patients with heart failure. Those patients can be treated with either a surgical procedure, but if they are at higher risk for surgical procedures, they could have a TAVR, which is a catheter-based replacement of the valve. In the same way, there are other valves like the mitral valve, tricuspid valve, that when there is a significant leaking of the valve, we could use clips or just replace the valve also via the catheter in patients who are not a surgical candidate. There are other more aggressive, more advanced procedures for patients who have, for example, advanced heart failure. That's the late stage when medications and other devices are not an option. We consider cardiac transplant or LVAD. LVAD stands for left ventricular assist device. And it's basically the left ventricular function of the heart is replaced by this pump. And this is used in patients who are not typically candidates for transplant, which remains the gold standard for end-stage heart failure.
Now, when LVAD came down the line, wasn't that used for patients who were waiting for a transplant?
Yeah, so an LVAD can be used as a short-term support. That's how we refer to it now. Before, we used to call it as a bridge to transplant or destination therapy. Bridge to transplant referred to its use in patients who were eligible for a transplant, but maybe at the moment were too sick or had something they had to get under control, diabetes, obesity, etc. And then later on, after getting the LVAD, they would take care of that issue and then go on the list. Patients who get it for long-term support, previously called a destination therapy or DT, are patients who have a contraindication, an absolute contraindication to transplant, and would not be eligible for it later. Let's say someone who's older, The cutoff, depending on where you go in the country, the cutoff to get a heart transplant, it's around 70 years of age. In some places, go as high as 73, even 74, maybe. But that is a little bit of a stretch. Someone who gets a transplant at that age has to be an otherwise perfect candidate, meaning don't have any other organ problems. But in terms of an LVAD, age is not a limitation. Even patients in their high 70s, 80, the oldest patient I've had with an LVAD was implanted at 80 years of age. So those patients who have an absolute contraindication can have an LVAD for long-term support. And the reality is that the current LVAD, the HeartMate 3, we call it, it's a very good device, and the outcomes are getting better and better in terms of survival of patients who have an LVAD. At 2 years, the survival is in the high 70s, 78, 79%, and that compares to around 81, 82% in patients who get a transplant. So it's not too far behind transplant. And the expectation is that as the technology gets better, the outcomes will also get better.
What is a Barostim?
A Barostim, it's a relatively new technology. It's an implantation at the level of the neck. Usually a surgeon does that. It's a stimulator of the body's neurohormonal system. It does a similar effect as the medication, but mechanically. It relaxes the cardiac muscle and improves the pressures in the heart and can improve the symptoms of heart failure in a selected group of patients. It's not something we use for everyone. We always try to stay away as much as possible from unnecessary procedure, but patients who don't respond to medications anymore, a Barostim is one of the interventions that could be considered. It's very effective in those who qualify for it.
The word anymore. So medications may have to be adjusted over time because they stop working?
Unfortunately, heart failure is a progressive disease. The medications we use are very good at delaying the progression, but unfortunately, at some point, the disease will just follow its course. There are patients that could be on good medications for 10 to 15 years, as long as that. But then at some point, they might start having worsening of their symptoms. And when we do cardiac tests, then we see that the disease has progressed. And then we have to consider if they are on the max doses of the medication. Sometimes they are not. And we just have to adjust and go up on the dose. Sometimes they need maybe more diuretics. But when none of that works, then we have to consider other strategies from the toolbox that we have available.
After all of these treatments, no matter where you are along the spectrum of heart failure, when you are diagnosed with heart failure, what's the role of exercise? How do you work it in?
Exercise is very, very important in patients who have heart failure. We highly recommend patients with heart failure to participate in physical activity. In fact, one of the things that we do, and we use that as an intervention actually, is send patients to cardiac rehabilitation. And what that is a supervised exercise training program where we have exercise physiologists and counselors, dietitians, in a controlled settings. Patients are connected to a monitor, and then they are coached through different activities and exercises, treadmill, bicycles, weight. It's a really good program because someone is watching the patient, especially those who are maybe more deconditioned or afraid that something might happen with them, can do that in a safe environment. And then at the end of the program, most patients feel very confident and just keep doing it on their own. But exercise is very important because this disease is very debilitating. And over time, very particularly in patients who have lived with heart failure and not properly treated for years, they develop physical conditioning. From being unable to exercise, they become incapable of doing so. So once we treat them, once we help them from a medical standpoint, the next step is to help them and rebuild their exercise tolerance and aerobic capacity. So that's where cardiac rehabilitation comes in. It's very important that they remain active.
So what do you see coming down the pike in terms of heart failure treatments that has you intrigued?
One of the things that I'm expecting the most is in terms of LVAD. Right now, the gold standard for someone who has end-stage heart failure or advanced heart failure is a cardiac transplant. LVAD is the second best. But the outcomes are getting better and better, very close. One of the main downsizes of an LVAD is the fact that it has a power line, a power cord that comes out of the body and has to be connected to batteries. So patients have to walk around with that. So there is research ongoing now to make that the process wireless and not have anything coming out of the body.
So it would be a one and done.
That is the hope. Mm-hmm. We still don't know because there are different devices being researched, and we have to wait and see what are the capabilities of that the wireless process. That is one idea being tested of skin energy, skin transfer, and another type of wireless energy or charging of the batteries. The good thing is that if we can get rid of the driveline, patients would be completely independent. So that might be very interesting. And patients actually who don't want to get an LVAD and need a transplant and maybe the wait list is too long might have less of a problem with having a device that doesn't have any wires coming out. And since that comes out of the shelf, we might not have that much of a wait list. So that's very promising. We still don't have anything, to my knowledge, that's coming in the near future, but that's what's being researched.
That's cardiologist Dr. Juarez Rojas Marte. Join us next month as we take an in-depth look at a health issue that might be affecting you or a loved one. As always, the new podcast will be available the first Wednesday of the month. I'm Rasa Kay.
You can always listen to all of the informative Deborah Doctor interviews at DeborahHealthReport.com. Schedule an appointment at DemandDeborah.org.